Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Ashley Edward Miller and Zach Stentz are the dynamic writers behind the movies X-Men First Class and Thor, and TV shows Fringe and Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles. But now they've done a 180 with their novel, Colin Fisher. In it, we get into the brain of a 14-year-old with Asperger's syndrome as the world around him decides to either accept or reject him. I spoke with Miller and Stentz about the novel and how they went from sci-fi to Colin Fisher.
It's funny because people tend to think of you as a writer based on your credits, and your credits aren't necessarily indicative of who you are as a writer or who you are as writers and the kinds of things that you do. Zach and I are actually very eclectic. You know, our very first screenplay that we wrote together was a Western noir. We wrote a big comedy together. We've written things that, you know, have never seen the light of day and some that have. But, you know, the Thor and the X-Men credits, and then, you know, you look at TV with Terminator and Fringe, and it's like, okay, these guys are, you know, superhero and science fiction guys. But, you know, I think we've always thought of ourselves as more than that.
So what brought you to a 14-year-old boy with Asperger's syndrome?
Well, it's funny. Colin actually started life as a TV pilot several years ago that was specifically us looking to branch out from science fiction. And we took elements of autobiography and elements of people who are close to us and kind of mixed them together with some imagination and found Colin.
You know, and part of that genesis was we kind of backed into it and realized what we found, because we were trying to come up with an idea for a show that was a mystery that was set in high school, but we didn't want it to be shticky. You know, we didn't want it to be the thing where, okay, well, here's the incredibly improbable mystery or event of the week. We didn't want to be Boston Public from like a kid's point of view. And, you know, we realized that we needed, first of all, somebody who could get us into that organically. And then we really both love Sherlock Holmes, and we had a long conversation, as we are wont to do, about Sherlock, and realized that, you know, he presents a lot of features of the Asperger's syndrome spectrum, you know, and that he
this was several years before the new BBC Sherlock, which pretty explicitly leans into that.
Yeah, exactly. This is like back in like 2003. You know, we were having this conversation. We said, well, you know, that's interesting, and that really spoke to us because of what Zach said about, you know, some of the more autobiographical elements and some of the things that we had experienced firsthand, either going through those things or by being associated with people who go through those things.
I have to say, when I started reading this book, it made me uncomfortable. And it was a good uncomfortable in the sense that we are experiencing what Colin Fisher is going through. And he's in high school and he's being bullied. They call him Short Bus. And unfortunately, they call him Retard. But it's the way that he's interacting with the other students, and they just don't get it. And you cringe.
Yeah.
It's a good cringe. But we thought it was really important not to pull punches in showing the kind of difficulties that Colin had, but hopefully at the same time, you know, we didn't stack things up against him so high that we made everyone around him unsympathetic and bullying. We felt like it was really important to present people who are on the complete spectrum from actively antagonistic to helpful and nurturing and loving towards him. So hopefully Colin experiences all of those things.
The other thing is that teenagers have incredibly acute bullcrap detectors. And I think that if we had put Colin in a world, you know, that was very much like what we present, it's challenging for him, but he didn't confront people who just casually called him Short Bus, you know, or called him a retard, or called him and whatever they call him and do whatever they do. I think that the audience would pick up on that and say, there's a part of this that's a lie. And I think also, dramatically, it would undercut what Colin is going through and the difficulty of his journey. I don't think our job as writers and creators is to present the world as we would like it to be, but to present it as it is from the point of view of this very particular human being.
You do it so well. The way that you write Colin's way of thinking, people's reaction, and yes, we do have these really wonderful characters that may not understand him, but they empathize with them and they try to understand him and wait while he goes off on one of his tangents on something that he finds interesting that was just a small little minute detail to that one person that was speaking to him. But to him, he knows a lot of knowledge and he wants to share that knowledge. But the way that you write it is wonderful. And even with the footnotes, it's as if you are inside Colin's brain and going through his tangent that he can't say out loud, but that's going through his head.
Well, first of all, thank you. I mean, secondly, you know, from personal experience with people who may or may not be on this phone call, it's not so much waiting as surrendering sometimes, you know, that that people need to get through things and kind of lay it out. And the footnotes actually started when we realized that, wow, we were just kind of casually throwing out things that we might have known or understood, but the audience might not. And so we started footnoting things just to sort of see if, like, can we go back and insert this later, you know, or are we trying to amuse ourselves? And we realized it kind of worked. And what it turned into is, you know, if Colin could just say one more thing, you know, that would be the thing that Colin would tell you about. But nobody has the time for that right now. But he's going to tell you because you're a captive audience.
Yeah, and we went through a lot of debate as we sat down to write this on how to present his POV. And the obvious thing to do would be to write it in first person, but we didn't want to do that. We wanted to open up the perspective a little bit more, but the kind of hybrid technique that we did was to both do the footnotes and then start each chapter with the journal entries that were directly in Colin's voice before we went to this kind of limited third person that we tell the rest of the story in.
There's a character that I really want to talk about, and that's Mr. Turrentine, and he is the gym teacher. There is the stereotypical thing about gym teachers kind of being gruff, and it is what it is, and pro jockey in sports and everything, but he really surprises the reader with how he reacts with Colin. And Colin even thinks he's expecting one facial expression, but gets a completely different one from him.
Yeah, Mr. Turrentine is an interesting cat. At first of all, I go out on a limb and say, you know, maybe Colin's right and he is God. But I think the thing that's special about Mr. Turrentine is he is the one character in the story who does not have an emotional investment in any of Colin's outcomes. And what I mean by that is his parents look at Colin and there's a degree of, you know, there's hope and there's fear and there's all those things you go through as a parent and they worry. You know, Dr. Doran looks at Colin as he is, you know, he's a student in her school, but he's also a particular challenge in her school and the things that she's trying to accomplish. The kids in school look at him each in their own way, but with a similar, you know, expectation of what that outcome is going to be. And Mr. Turrentine is divorced from that. Mr. Turrentine looks at Colin, what he sees is a child, and he sees a child he has expectations for, and he expects the child to meet those expectations. And then he does everything in his power as a teacher to enable that child to meet those expectations without doing it for him. And he simply doesn't have time to get caught up in the bullcrap of dealing with Colin. I was a teacher for a while. I taught middle school. And there was something that my mother, who had been a principal, told me that I should always be careful not to do. And that was to engage in silly talk. And what that means is when a kid starts blabbing at you, that you get caught up in the blah, blah, blah. Never get caught up in the blah, blah, blah. Just kind of look at them and just kind of say what the thing is that you expect and just kind of give them all the indications that they need to go forward with that. And I think there's a lot of that in Mr. Turrentine, but he's also, you know, he's got kind of this Arlie Ermey quality without being quite over the top, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and we very purposely took the stereotype of the gym teacher and inverted it. That was something that was definitely done with malice aforethought.
I felt like he also had all the qualities from when Colin was in his office that Colin appreciated. So I think he felt more at ease with him because Mr. Turrentine was very orderly and Colin appreciates order.
Yes.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And, you know, if you have any experience with kids or adults with Asperger's, it's that's a very common thing, which is, you know, you become very comfortable with someone who is consistent and sets expectations and follows through with them in an orderly fashion, as you said. So that's someone who, even while not having any training in dealing with Colin, is going to hit on all of the things that are good for him.
And so you had mentioned the Sherlock Holmes connection, and how this is part mystery, aside from being with Colin in his life, that because of this attention to detail, because of his orderly way of thinking, when a gun goes off in the cafeteria, it's in his mind of going through the high school hierarchy and the different social groups and trying to break it all down and figure out who brought this gun to school.
Yeah, you know, I think the way that Colin thinks and looks at the world that lends itself to him doing that kind of thing is that he looks at a situation or he looks at a scenario or a room and he says, these are all the things that fit together. These are all the things that do not fit together. These are all the patterns that emerge from the things that fit and the things that do not fit. And he just organizes all of that information. So the things that do not fit emerge just aglow, and he sees it and he understands it because he's already processed all of that information and said, okay, I get what all this is and I do not get what that is. And that becomes the mystery. And he's able to tell you why that thing does not fit, even if he can't tell you how it got there in the first place.
If there's one contrivance in the book, it's the one that every story needs one to get going. And in this case, it's taking a character who looks at life as a mystery and everything around him as mysteries to be solved, and actually a bona fide mystery in his lap. And we view that a little bit like having John McClane in a building full of terrorists in its own way.
Yeah, and actually that's going to be the sequel. Colin gets caught in a building full of terrorists. And yes,
well, we do reference Die Hard in the book.
That's true, we do.
As Colin's favorite movie of that year.
You do. And I mean, in those bits of Colin's notebook that we see, and I have to say, notebook is like its own character. I mean, it's capitalized. It's as if that is a part or another being for Colin.
Yeah.
That's funny. You're the first person to say that, but at least in interviews, but that's a really interesting insight. And I think you're absolutely right. It is another character in the book.
Turning that into a proper noun was very much a choice. And it comes down to, in a weird way, I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can cut it. I think to a certain extent, it's a representation of Colin. And in some ways, it speaks for Colin in ways that Colin cannot speak. And that's why he's so protective of it. That's why it's what he turns to always. That's why he freaks out when Melissa writes her number in the notebook, because he's kind of besmirching his mind. Also, it's felt very British to just sort of randomly capitalize things.
Except we don't, like, spell color with a O-U-R.
But we thought about it. We asked Puffin, our UK publisher, if they put extraneous U's in a lot of our words, like neighborhood, and they said no, which disappointed me greatly.
That would be fun, though, to have a different version such as that. So with Notebook, we get these little snippets of Colin's thoughts, and there's always investigate. It's that prompt that Colin needs to look further into something that he doesn't understand or wants to know more about.
That's right. He's not literally saying that everything is a crime to be investigated, but it is a question that he has. It's the thing that does not fit and needs to be explored.
Yeah, that is his shorthand for, I have encountered something I do not understand, and my response to it is to find out about it.
The dynamic between Colin and his parents and his brother was very interesting to read, and I'd have to say, just reading about the interactions between his mother and father, they were just brilliant and hilarious.
It's funny that you say that. We got along great with our editors, and like kind of the one area where there was kind of back and forth on was how much to show of the rest of the family and how much in particular to show of the parents, given that I guess that's fairly uncommon in the YA field to kind of break the protagonist's point of view enough to see the parents. But we thought it was really, that was something that we were always really felt strongly about, that we should go into the parents' POV a little bit and kind of show the challenge of Colin from their perspective as well as from Colin's own.
And the other thing about that is that I think it becomes very easy, and it's a trap, to write adult characters in stories like these, whether you're writing a novel or you're writing for television, you're writing a feature, where the adults are stupid or the adults don't get it, or the parents are disconnected from the child's problem. And the reality is that's a very pandering way of presenting adults in these stories, because even though kids like to say that all those things are true, the reality is that it's not. That the difference between the adult and the child is that the adult has been there and has had the time to look back on it, and the tension comes from just that fear of looking back and saying, my God, how did I get through that? So when Colin's father says to him, you know, look, this is going to be tough. You know, when I was your age, I was a jock. So I didn't really have any problems. He's looking at it from that point of view. And it was really important to us to kind of see that. Also, we felt like if Colin is our intellectual Superman, that he needed, you know, his Ma and Pa Kent to raise him right.
I think that by having strong parents, it obviously reflects on how the child acts, and especially a child that has Asperger's syndrome, to understand the rest of the world. I mean, we get that glimpse saying, well, maybe we should have put him in a special school instead of matriculating him into real high school. But then they looked at each other, but that's not real life.
That's right.
Yeah, that's very true. And in a way, it kind of makes Colin's experiences even scarier that, you know, what if a character like this had sympathetic parents who were doing their best to help him, but for several hours a day, he's out of their sight. And that's part of parenthood, and that's part of growing up, which hopefully a lot of people will connect with.
And also, if you have parents who are incredibly intelligent and are really keyed into what their kid is going through, and they still don't get it all the time, and they're still freaked out, I think that speaks louder than saying, oh, well, it's just, you know, Joe Schmo, and he just doesn't get his brilliance on it. That's kind of easy. And the other thing is that as a parent, the tension is between the desire to protect the child and the desire to allow the child to learn. And his parents go through that. And part of Colin's journey is about emerging from a protective cocoon. The very first thing that happens to him is he shows up at school and he doesn't have a shadow. He emerges unprotected, and all of that gets taken away. So it's a theme of the book.
It is wonderfully written. The name of it is Colin Fisher. Ashley Miller and Zach Stentz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Again, the name of Zach Stentz and Ashley Edward Miller's novel is Colin Fisher. It is published by Razorbill. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Don't you think about your actions? Counterweight dire reactions. Zero soul, you're a loser, son. A minefield and a